The Voices of Search podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything podcast network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com. Welcome to the Voices of Search podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything podcast network. Ready to expedite your company's organic growth efforts? Sit back, relax, and get ready for your daily dose of search engine optimization wisdom. Here's today's host of the Voices of Search podcast, Tyson Stockton.
Hey, what's going on? My name is Tyson from Previsible.io, and today we're going to be talking about SEO news. Joining me today is Kathy Alice Brown. Kathy is the owner and SEO consultant at WebNSO Digital. And Kathy is also one of our experts in residence at Previsible. And today we're going to be diving into SEO news, but SEO news you might have missed. And there's obviously, and rightfully so, there's tons of commotion and talk about the major algorithm updates, helpful content, SG, all those other fun things that are going on in the SEO world. But today we're going to dive into some of the topics that maybe they came out and you missed.
And this podcast is also sponsored by Ahrefs. What if I told you that you could monitor your website's SEO health, backlinks, and organic rankings at no costs? Sounds too good to be true? Well, it's not. Because my friends at Ahrefs just launched Ahrefs Webmaster Tools. Ahrefs' new Webmaster Tools product quickly helps you improve your site's visibility by pointing solutions to over 100 technical issues that might be holding your search performance down. Plus, AWT monitors for backlinks so you'll know the most linked to pages and how those links are affecting your rankings. And AWT shares what keywords your website ranks for and compares how you stack up against competitors for key metrics like search volume, keyword difficulty, and traffic value. Look, monitoring your website used to require multiple expensive tools. And now, thanks to Ahrefs, that's not the case anymore because AWT will help you monitor your SEO health, backlinks, and keywords for free. And no, it's not one of those 14-day free trial offers. It's a powerful site audit tool that will keep working for you for free. So check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools at ahrefs.com/AWT. That's ahrefs.com/AWT.
So with that, here's my conversation with Kathy Alice Brown, expert in residence at Previsible. Kathy, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be back.
Yeah, I always enjoy our chats. And today we have the unsung stories of SEO news.
Yes.
So maybe to start us off on it, like, what have you caught wind of that maybe went under the radar?
Yeah, so I thought an episode on just little things that happened with SEO that maybe got buried in the noise of all the algos we had last fall, because we had several core updates. We had a product review update. We had the helpful content update. I think there was a spam update, you know, and I was kind of caught up in those updates as well. And there was just a couple of things I stumbled on that I went, oh, you know, I didn't know this, that this report is gone. It's been replaced, you know? So I thought an episode just talking through some of these newsworthy items that happened in, you know, the last 5 to 6 months might be a good thing to talk about.
Absolutely. And what on the list do you have? Like, what's the first under the radar news story that you came across?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So the first one I'm going to say is goodbye robots.txt tester and hello robots.txt report. So you may have remembered the old Search Console. It used to be called like Search Analytics and Webmaster Tools. And over just the years almost, there were these sort of extra tools and reports that kind of lived outside of that new envelope that was created when they rebranded it to Search Console. The International Report is one where it had the old look and feel. That's actually gone now. And one of those things, it wasn't in, you didn't find it in Search Console, but if you search for it, you could have found it, was a robots.txt tester. And I actually was perturbed when it went away because it was actually pretty handy. You could select your site and you could modify the robots.txt and test a lot of different scenarios. So you could take your URL, test it against the existing robots.txt file, see whether it's blocked or allowed, and then you could then alter the directives and then test it again. And the reason I found this very helpful is that I could test any recommendations that I would give somebody. So I was a little perturbed when it went away. So it did go away, but there is something new in Search Console. It's not exactly the same thing. It has its own usefulness, and it's basically just called, I think, the robots.txt report. And I believe you find it under settings, where everything that's sort of random kind of goes. And what it will tell you, and this is useful, is the last time that Google read the robots.txt. So I think we might make the mistake of thinking that every time Google comes to crawl your site, it reads the robots.txt file. Wrong. It does not. And in fact, I saw an example of where the robots.txt file had not been read for 2 weeks. And this was a pretty large site that was putting out a lot of content and a lot of pages. So that's useful in itself, just knowing when it was last read. And also, you can see the old versions of it. So that's useful in itself. But getting back to my angst of no longer having a way to test my recommendations, there are third-party tools that you can use in its place. And the Merkle one at technicalseo.com comes to mind. So that's thing one in Search Console. The other thing that you might have missed in Search Console, for those of you who have e-commerce sites, is that if you go into the performance report and you select search appearance, you can now filter by merchant listings. And so for those of you who, you know, it's not just about showing up in the blue links, it's also about showing up in that product grid, which is where the merchant center comes into play. So there's now the ability to see that in the search appearance section in the performance report, and that's awfully handy.
Excellent. That's a nice win.
Yeah, that's a nice win, you know, especially for the e-commerce folks out there. And finally, this last thing I never used, I don't know anybody who has, but the crawl rate limiter tool is going to be, I think it still exists, but it's going to go away. So there's just some stuff that's been going on in Search Console that, and this sort of falls under the bucket of news you might have missed.
Absolutely. And I mean, it has been, I mean, just like anything else, like an evolving kind of update on it. It is nice also kind of sometimes throw out in these conversations some of the, I don't want to say legacy tools, but kind of like the throwbacks to webmaster tools and some of the early kind of naming and where things were found. What else do you have on the list for SEO news?
So, I mean, this is probably not going to be a comprehensive list at all, but as the SERP changes, it's not just SGE, which if you've kind of enabled that, you might see the generated AI stuff. But the SERPs continue to change, and that's always been true. But one of the things that people might have missed is that seller ratings are now showing up. And so again, for people who work on e-commerce sites, that is something to know. I've even seen a screenshot of where it almost showed like a little coupon thing that you could click on. I've not seen that in the wild. I've seen the seller raters, but so there's definitely some flux and changes that are happening in the SERPs. We used to see indented results. Those seem to have gone away. There was an announcement again last fall where it used to be that you could get thumbnails for videos for pages that had a whole bunch of videos on it. But now you only see the video in the SERP when it's the main content. And that was actually announced by Google. So that one, you know, people might have heard of. And then, you know, again, the SERPs, I'm going to give a shout out to Brody Clark. He actually kind of keeps track of all the SERP changes and tests on his site. So if that's interesting to anybody, you should go check it out. But I saw the other day, he had screenshotted like something called the popular opinion carousels. So the SERPs are continuing to change a lot. And those are just a few of the things I've noticed in the last couple of months that maybe, you know, people have not seen themselves or they're too heads down to be playing around with the SERPs.
Absolutely. And I find it interesting, too, the e-commerce component, because in some ways, I mean, not in others, but in some ways, it feels almost like that sector is like the tip of the spear a little bit. And maybe it's a little bit of the nature of like having the like additional structured data and having product feeds and things like that to tap into. But it's like out of these kind of less spoken about updates, we have, you know, a component within GSC. We have some areas which over the last few years, it's been a very volatile space, I would say, in the SERPs of the e-commerce. So I don't know, maybe it's like a little like extrapolating on, but it feels a little bit like Google still, you know, has some nerves about them on like, I guess, their position in the e-commerce area. And I mean, years back, we were having conversations about Amazon increasing in percentage of people starting their product searches on Amazon versus Google. But it kind of feels like maybe this is one of those hot categories for Google as far as how they continue to progress the experience.
Yeah, there's a lot unpacked in your comments. I'm going to tell a really brief little story. This was like actually 10 years ago, and I was actually giving a talk, and I actually asked the audience, you know, if you were looking for printer ink, how many would you go to Google to search for printer ink? And how many of you would search on Amazon? And it was like half the room raised their hands about, I mean, in printer ink, you know, it's a little bit of a obvious category where you'd go to Amazon. But I think about half the room raised their hand that they would go. And this was like 10 years ago. And the point I was kind of trying to make is that it's not so much Bing that's the competitor that Google's worrying about, it's Amazon. So I think you're quite right in that the rate of change and experimentation we're seeing from Google in the SERPs is kind of exponentially more when it comes to e-commerce. I mean, it feels like, and you know, I work on e-commerce sites for a while, and then I go and work on some other sites. And so then I come back and it's like, oh, I need to really familiarize myself with what's going on with the SERPs. And it's like, oh, this looks different, you know? And of course, it totally depends on the search I'm doing. But I just think the rate of change and experimentation, it's in e-commerce, I think you're right. I think it's almost that tip of the iceberg. And I think that's where, and I'm of course speculating here, that's where Google actually is putting a lot of effort, because that's where they want to take away business from the Amazons. And they want users to come to Google to search for things that they can buy. You know, I have a couple things on the list about structured data. And yeah, there's been changes in the structured data, and I was going to run through those really quickly. But one of the points I want to make, I think with SEOs, it's really easy to get lulled into like, oh, you have your enterprise tracking tool, you open your enterprise tracking tool, and oh, okay, we're ranked number two. But yeah, number two where? You know, number two might have been, you know, in the middle of the page, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, but now it's like at the bottom of the page. So I think it's just interesting to bring this stuff up just because that volatility could really impact it, the click-through rate, even if your rankings are super stable.
That's, I mean, it's a little tangent of where we're going because I do want to hear about the structured data. But the last thing you hit on, I completely agree where the way that we're looking at SEO reporting feels like we're at a stage that it's going to start to evolve very rapidly. And the value or kind of weight that we could put behind, you know, rank position and using that as like one of the primary metrics, like really does seem to be an area that I anticipate there being quite a bit of volatility. And, you know, maybe it's less looking at reporting on the keyword as the primary and more of like URL performances as the primary. But maybe that's something that we could jump into in a later conversation.
Sure.
Tell me about the structured data, though. It's a super important one. I mean, obviously, it has the ties in e-commerce, but this is a really critical area of SEO that has been progressing a lot over recent years. So,
yeah, and they're all each kind of little changes, or there's a couple of new structured data schemas. But it's definitely showing that Google is continuing to at least invest in this area. And with some of these, there is a tie-in with e-commerce. And well, I'll just start with the first one. There's now a schema called vacation rentals that's on the list of, you know, if you go to developers.google.com, there's all those featured guides for each of the entities that can result in a rich result. And well, you can kind of see the writing there, right? I think Google is like, oh yeah, Airbnb's doing well. Let's give people the ability to mark up their vacation rentals so that the SERP looks a bit nicer and has more information. And so that's a new one that's been added. And just to take a step back, just for people who are newer to the schema world, you know, remember we have something like 330 or over 300 entities as defined by schema.org, but there's only 40 or so that will result in a rich result. And those are the ones that you can find that in the Google documentation, developers.google.com. So if you're kind of getting your head into schema, or maybe you already are, I would suggest periodically taking a look, because that's what I just did. And I was just noticing that there's a couple new entries on that list. And vacation rentals was one of them. So another one, course info. So you now can mark if you sell like whatever online courses or what, you know, I think this would be bricks and mortar courses as well. There's course info is now a schema you can do markup for. Car dealerships, there's now a vehicle listing schema. And then there's a new one called profile page. And this one, this is really more of, and this is kind of a nod to the creator economy. So this one you can use if for some reason you have a page that a creator's feature prominently, you can use this markup to talk more about the creator, like what's their social media handles and things like that. So that's what the profile page one is. And so there seems to be a steady, and I'll have to get to a couple of the other ones as well. There seems to be a steady investment by Google or into making more markups available. That doesn't mean they won't take them away like they took away the FAQ page one. But as we were talking about, I could definitely see that it looks at, you know, marketplaces like Udemy, for example, or perhaps Airbnb, and that might be why we now have these new structured data schemas that we can now mark up and get a result, rich result out of. So those are the new ones. There was just a couple more I was going to mention. These are not new, but there's now support for product variants. So you can mark up product variants, and I think that's really handy because this is really common in e-commerce, and it's always a big decision about, would you make the variant indexable or non-indexable? You know, that's always like a choice you have to make, and it's not always a straightforward choice. But at the very least, now you can at least mark them up where, you know, if you have a shirt available in three colors, you know, you can classify those as product variants. And then the last one I have on my list, and again, maybe not comprehensive, but I think I got most of them, is that the organization schema has been expanded. The recommended list of fields has been expanded for organization schema. So it used to be, I mean, we always added more, but it used to be you just gave logo and I forget the other one and, you know, the name. But now the recommended list of fields includes address. And so if you have organizational schema and you kind of went kind of bare bones, you might want to circle back and take a look at that recommendation list and perhaps enhance your organizational schema.
Time for a 1 minute break to hear from our sponsor, Previsible. So you're looking for SEO help and you got a couple of options. You could start replying to spam from agencies that claim they can get you to rank number one on Google. You could pay an hourly rate for a consultant who will inevitably nickel and dime you with hourly charges. Or you could work with a cookie cutter agency to quickly launch a strategy-less project with low success rate. None of those sound very good, now do they? Well, that's where Previsible's integrated consulting model comes in. Previsible draws from a collective 40 years of SEO and digital marketing experience to unlock your organic growth opportunities. They build custom solutions that combine strategy, technical expertise, content, and reporting to effectively operationalize SEO for your business. Previsible's four-stage approach ensures that your SEO programs thrive by starting off with a strategy-first approach. Then they support you in your efforts to create quality content, help you identify technical issues, and most importantly, they'll work with your cross-functional teams to integrate your SEO strategies to make sure that your SEO budget actually drives results, not just your agency's bottom line. So join brands like Yelp, eBay, Canva, Atlassian, Square, all who rely on the SEO consultants at Previsible. For more information, go to previsible.io. That's Previsible, previsible.io.
Interesting. Obviously, there's a fair amount in there that, you know, is almost like I'd almost consider like the vacation rentals as like, or the automotive, like those as being almost like variants of e-commerce, like they kind of run in a similar fashion. It's a little unique, but it kind of gives, you know, potentially Google and other search engines the opportunity to surface and experiment with different things. I feel like it's also on like your last point on the organization one is it is worth just kind of reiterating or going back to. It's like, sure, there is the value in some schema markup from actual SERP elements, but then there is still value in schema markup that may not have a direct influence into a SERP feature, but more of just painting that, I don't know, context behind it. And the organ is like trying to push that more fields are recommended on the organization piece feels a bit like strengthening the known elements towards an entity. And I mean, both on the creator and from like the organization piece, it kind of feels like they're wanting some more details or more direct details of some of these like entities that they're coming across.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So there's the universe of schemas that you can get a rich result from. And then there's like the larger universe of schemas where you don't get a rich result, but it still might behoove you to implement because you're giving Google more information. And one that I can just really cite off the top of my head is like person schema. There's a property called like knows about. So if you really want to become known for something and you feel like you want to reinforce that with schema and you have like a page that you use person schema on, now we have profile page, so I'd have to look at that. But that knows about field would be a kind of an interesting property, and that's not going to result in a rich result or anything like that, but it will build out the entity, which in this case is a person, would build out Google's knowledge of that person. So yeah, I tend to agree. Entity, you know, we know that it's things, not strings anymore. You know, it used to be that what Google did was just match up, you know, to look at a search query and map up that string to whatever you had on the page. Those days are long gone. I think that was like Hummingbird, which I think, I don't know when Hummingbird, maybe 2015 or something like that, thereabouts. Yeah, Google has definitely been marching to more of a entity-based understanding of the web and its kind of connections to the real world. And, you know, that's why they acquired, I think it was Freebase, and ingested all of that entity information. And, you know, why Wikipedia in some ways is really helpful to cite as, and I'm kind of jumping around here, but like, for example, when we get going back to organization schema, there are all these subtypes of organization schema. There is like mobile store, or retail store. There's like, I don't know how many there are, but there are a lot. And if there's one that doesn't represent your business, this is kind of more in the local SEO arena, you can just put alternate type as a property and just point it to a Wikipedia entry that describes your business. And so these are tricks I've done in the past. And so I would agree with you. I think anything that helps Google understand your business and kind of the entities that kind of go along with your business, you know, from the company itself to the people who work on it to the types of services and product. I've done service markup. That's another one that doesn't have a rich result. That can be useful to do. So I think, you know, any kind of, you know, filling in the gaps for Google as far as what an entity graph looks for your website and how that maps onto, you know, your actual business, I think can be helpful.
Absolutely. And I like the call out that you gave, especially like smaller, newer, those type of organizations or entities in this lens of, you know, there may not be as much information around it. So having that more explicit descriptions and components, I think, is super helpful. So we've been talking a lot about, you know, changes in schema, GSC. It's an election year. Political news is hot. What's going on with the DOJ?
Yeah, the DOJ trial continues. And I guess because we were in the middle of the helpful content update and the October core update, one thing people might have missed was that in October there was testimony. I believe his name is Pandu Nayak from Google testified. And we learned a little bit more about a system, a core system called NavBoost, which Google has actually said they've been using since 2005. And those of us who have been in the business for a while, we had always suspected that Google used user engagement data in some way. And this testimony, if there wasn't any doubt before, now there's definitely no doubt. So back in October, there's been a PDF that was circulated around that has the testimony. And there's been a couple of articles people have written about it. And I just wanted to bring it up because it did sort of happen right in the middle of all the core updates and HCU. And so the deal about NavBoost, and I'll try to do it justice. So basically, Google has a problem where it has a lot of stuff in the index, like a ton of stuff. And so it needs to find ways, you know, for a given search query that comes back with 10,000 possible candidates, it needs to find a way to cull down that larger set to a smaller set. And there's a couple of systems that help with this. And one of them is called NavBoost. And the other ones that maybe fine-tune once that smaller set has been identified are Burk and RankBrain. So going back to NavBoost, NavBoost is trained on user engagement data for the past 13 months. And it's clicks, it's mouse hovers, it's just, you know, actions users take when they interact with the SERPs in the site. So what we found out is that the Google, you know, NavBoost has this core system called NavBoost that's been trained for the last 13 months of user engagement data, and that helps cull down the larger set of potential search results to a smaller set. So to me, that was kind of really important to learn about. I mean, I always had said, you know, we need to satisfy the user. We need to design our pages for the user. I mean, this is all advice we are used to giving, but now I'm really saying it. And for example, I recently did a recommendation where I was comparing a certain template of pages that weren't quite as performing as well as the competitor. And one of the things I really noticed about the pages of the client I was evaluating was that the competitor had a, here, see this, you know, okay, you've read through the page. Now you might want to see like more context about the page. And here's a link that will take you to that more context. And my client didn't have that link. And I was thinking about it. And it was like, well, you know, my client doesn't have that link. Yeah, you can find it, but it's really hard to find. And so what is, you know, and these are pretty, these pages, they definitely have a user engagement data. So what is, you know, maybe what Google's seeing is that more people are coming to this page and bouncing off, where on the competitor, they're staying on the site and clicking through. So that was a, you know, that was a recommendation I gave, was like, we need to make it easier for people to find this additional page that will give you more context on what you just were looking at. So I just think that's really important for people to realize that this, you know, this is how Google works, is that, you know, it's not like the only signal it looks at, but it's a signal. And for particularly for pages that get traffic, you know, not so much the long tail, but more the middle tail and head term stuff, this could be a factor in your SEO performance.
Now, just a kind of more of a minor clarification. You called out 13 months. Now, this to me, like obviously 13's, it's not 12, probably has some tie to it. Did you come across anything of the significance of 13 months or why 13 months is the time frame that they're using?
I don't know why. I mean, that's what the testimony, the 13 months came directly from the testimony. And there was a comment that a couple of years ago, they used 18 months, but now they use 13 months. So my guess would be you would have to have at least 12 months because of seasonality.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the 13 months is, and you know, I'm totally speculating, so I don't really have a great answer for your question. You know, maybe just having that extra month is a way to, because you know, there's seasonality. We have repeatable trends that happen every 12 months, but we also have evolving user behavior. And we saw this totally with COVID, is, you know, people search differently. They, you know, the people evolve in how they use the web. So my suspicion, and this is totally speculation, is that extra month they have like two Januaries, for example, to compare against, to just kind of go, oh yeah, you know, seasonally this looks good, or oh no, the user behavior has changed. So this is a larger trend on how people are using the web for this particular type of query.
Interesting.
So yeah, totally a guess on my part, but that is why I think it has to be a little bit more than 12 months.
Well, and I'm glad that we can at least shut the door on the conversation. I mean, I guess it just opens another door, but at least there should be little debate on whether or not this type of information or this type of data is being used. And now maybe the conversation progresses to, at which extent is this being used? And kind of shout out to a previous conversation I had with Bernard from ClearScope. He was kind of calling out too that he felt like some of this engagement data was being used in different weights. And it's almost, you have one SEO game on getting index and ranking for your target terms, and then almost another game that's going on the first page and having like some heightened performance on page one. But I think what you're sharing here also kind of signifies, and to your previous points, that it's something that's helping them whittle down the list to then apply some of these other elements like RankBrain, whatever else. So I think it is interesting seeing, and it'll be particularly interesting to see how the conversation evolves now into how engagement metrics are being used.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Google's been saying, you know, do the right thing for the user, you know, build your pages for the user. Now there seems to be a little bit more context on why they keep telling us this. But for me, I can at least point to this. And when I say things like, you know, have you talked to your UX people? Have you done any kind of user testing? At least as an SEO consultant, I kind of feel like I'm coming from more of a place of certainty, if that makes sense. So I was actually pretty pleased to see this, because I've been kind of beating this drum, and I feel like people don't always listen to me when I say, yeah, you might want to do some user testing here. This page seems hard to use. Oh, you know, and they kind of brush me aside, and, you know, because that's not my quote unquote, you know, my swim lane, right? But now I can claim it is.
Fair. So, Kathy, any other final pieces or kind of comments that you'd want to advocate to the listeners?
Sure. There's just one more thing I want to just share. So I don't remember exactly when this was announced, but it was kind of in the early fall, that with the Core Web Vitals INP, Interaction Index Paint, is going to be replacing FID, which is First Input Delay. And just a reminder that that's still coming, that swap. I believe this target is still March. And as we're recording this, we're at the end of February, and I'm sure when this gets broadcast, we'll be in March. So something to just keep an eye out for. And the reason I wanted to just bring this up is I've looked at a lot of Core Web Vital reports for various sites, and FID is pretty easy to pass. A lot of sites pass it. INP, not so much. It's a more comprehensive metric. It takes into account all the interactions that you have, that it, you know, someone has on a page, not just the first one. So you could have one really slow one, and that will throw, you know, it kind of takes the worst of the bunch. And I think, you know, a lot of sites today use some kind of JavaScript framework like Next.js or React. And what I've really seen with these is that they're kind of optimized to give you a great LCP, an initial paint of the largest contentful paint. But then, you know, once the page is rendered, then they tend to do hydration or they bring in more chunks. And you have to be a little bit careful with that, because that will impact the INP. And so I'm thinking that you might see some struggles with the shops running these types of frameworks with that metric. And we just had a whole conversation about user experience and engagement signals. So if it's bad enough that it's causing your users to leave or get frustrated, then it might be a metric you may want to pay attention to.
Absolutely. All great call outs. And thank you, Kathy, for helping fill us in on some of those unsung stories in the SEO news world.
And a special thanks to Previsible for sponsoring this podcast. If you're looking for support with all of your SEO needs, Previsible's integrated consulting model is there for you. They draw on a collective 40 years of SEO and digital marketing experience to help you unlock your organic search and growth opportunities. So join brands like Yelp, eBay, Canva, Atlassian, and Square, all who rely on SEO consultants at Previsible. For more information, go to previsible.io. That's previsible.io. And a special thanks to Ahrefs for sponsoring this podcast. Monitoring your website used to require multiple expensive tools, but that's not the case anymore, thanks to Ahrefs, because they just launched their Ahrefs Webmaster Tools product, which monitors your SEO health, helps you keep track of your backlinks, and gives you the insight into what keywords are performing for free. So check out Ahrefs Webmaster Tools at ahrefs.com/AWT. That's Ahrefs, ahrefs.com/AWT.
But with that, that wraps up this episode of the Voice of Search podcast. As always, thanks to Kathy Alice Brown expert in residence at Previsible, for joining us. In part two of this conversation, which will be published tomorrow, we're going to continue the conversation and we're going to discuss the tale of two refractors. If you can't wait until the next episode and you'd like to learn more about Kathy, you can find a link to her LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or go ahead and head on over to her website at KathyAliceBrown.com. And if you didn't have a chance to take notes while listening to this podcast, head over to voiceofsearch.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes, contact information for our guests, and you can send us your topic suggestions, SEO questions, or simply just apply to be a guest speaker and join us on the podcast. You can reach us on social media, where the show handles is at Voice of Search on X or Twitter. And you can also reach me on LinkedIn. And if you haven't subscribed yet and want a daily stream of SEO and content marketing insights in your podcast feed, we'll publish a new episode every workday. Hit the subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll be back in your feed in the next day. And with that, that wraps up this episode of The Voice of Search, and we'll see you in the next episode.